Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for words and their stories and people in America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we have great news for all of our listeners. By learning English in addition to your own language, you could delay or prevent many forms of mental decline. Milagros Ardine has the story.
New research suggests that speaking more than one language may delay different kinds of dementia, that is, the loss of mental ability. In fact, researchers say, speaking two languages appears to be more important than the level of education in defending against dementias. A study in India examined the effect of knowing more than one language in delaying the first signs of several disorders. These included Alzheimer's disease, frontotemporal dementia, vascular dementia, Lewy bodies dementia, and mixed dementias. Researchers studied nearly 650 people whose average age was 66. 240 of those studied suffered from Alzheimer's, the most common form of mental decline. 391 of the subjects spoke two or more languages. Investigators found the dementias began about 4.5 years later in those who were bilingual compared to those who spoke only one language. The level of education had no effect on the age at the first sign of dementia. Thomas Bach helped to organize the study. He is with the Center of Cognitive Aging at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. He suggests that individuals who speak more than one language train their brains by moving back and forth between different words and expressions. Mr. Bach believes this effort improves what scientists call executive functioning or attention to tasks. This mental ability often weakens in people with dementias. Researchers found there was no extra gain in speaking more than two languages. They also did not see a delay in the first signs of Lewy bodies dementia. The disorder causes patients to see or experience things that do not really exist. It can also cause sufferers to move back and forth between being wide awake and really sleepy. Mr. Bach says it does not appear important whether you learn a language at a young age or later in life.
So it's not something that you, so to say, miss the boat where you don't do it as a baby. It's something that it's still quite useful and powerful when you do it as an adult.
Scientists found that speaking more than one language helped delay the first signs of dementias, even in those who could not read. An article on the benefits of bilingualism on dementias was published in the journal Neurology. I'm Milagros Ardine.
And I'm Jonathan Evans. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. Many people around the world die from smoking-related diseases, such as lung cancer. But millions of lives could be saved in China if the country had tougher anti-smoking rules. Here again is Milagros Ardin.
A new study finds that more than 13 million deaths could be prevented in China over the next 40 years if the country had stronger anti-smoking measures. But the study's authors say China has not taken many steps to control the use of tobacco. The study was published in the British Medical Journal. China signed the World Health Organization's International Treaty on Tobacco Control in 2003, but it has not put in place many of the WHO's ideas to help people stop smoking. Experts say following these ideas could cut smoking by 40% before the year 2050. Without stronger anti-smoking measures, there could be 50 million tobacco-related deaths in the country over that time. The authors of the study used a computer program called SimSmoke to make their predictions. David Levy works at Georgetown University's Lombardi Cancer Center in Washington, D.C. He says China has one-third of the world's cigarette smokers. More than half of the men in China smoke. Mr. Levy says people often begin smoking without knowing it will harm their health. He says people in some countries smoke because it makes them feel important.
Smoking, you know, once it gets established, and in many of the low and middle income countries, you know, there's a kind of a prestige initially to smoking.
The WHO plan calls for a ban on smoking in all public places. It also calls for countries to place health warnings on cigarette containers and offer programs to help people stop smoking. And it says there should be high taxes on tobacco. Experts say a 75% increase in cigarette taxes could save about 3.5 million lives. They say an end to cigarette advertising could save 2 million lives. After signing the WHO agreement, China placed a 12% tax on cigarettes, but the government did not force Chinese smokers to pay the tax. One of the authors of the new study is Tai Wei Hu. He is a professor of public policy economics at the University of California, Berkeley. Professor Hu says China's culture and society are changing. He said President Hu Jintao supports a ban on smoking in public. The president also wants people to stop giving cigarettes as gifts to officials and employers. Mr. Hu says the most effective anti-smoking measure in China would be a large increase in the cigarette tax, but he does not expect that to happen soon. I'm Milagros Ardin.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
Words and Their Stories is next, followed by People in America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English. Thank you.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories. Today's word is belittle. It was first used by Thomas Jefferson, the third president of the United States. Many years ago, a French naturalist, the Count de Buffon, wrote some books about natural history. The books were a great success, even though some critics did not like them. Some critics said, "Count Buffon is more of a poet than a scientist." Thomas Jefferson did not like what the Count had said about the natural wonders of the New World. It seemed to Jefferson that the Count had gone out of his way to speak of natural wonders in America as if they were unimportant. This troubled Thomas Jefferson. He, too, was a naturalist, as well as a farmer, inventor, historian, writer, and politician. He had seen the natural wonders of Europe. To him, they were no more important than those of the New World. In 1788, Thomas Jefferson wrote about his home state, Virginia. While writing, he thought of its natural beauty and then of the words of Count de Buffon. At that moment, Jefferson created a new word, belittle. He said, "The Count de Buffon believes that nature belittles her productions on this side of the Atlantic." Noah Webster, the American word expert, liked this word. He put it in his English language dictionary in 1806. Belittle, to make small, unimportant. Americans had already accepted Jefferson's word and started to use it. In 1797, the Independent Chronicle newspaper used the word to describe a politician the paper supported. "He is an honorable man," the paper wrote. "So let the opposition try to belittle him as much as they please." In 1844, the Republican Sentinel of Virginia wrote this about the opposition party: "The Whigs may attempt to belittle our candidates. That is a favorite game of theirs." In 1872, a famous American word expert decided that the time had come to kill this word. He said, "Belittle has no chance of becoming English." And as more critical writers of America, like those of Britain, feel no need of it, the sooner it is forgotten, the better. This expert failed to kill the word. Today, belittle is used not only in the United States and England, but in other countries where the English language is spoken. It seems that efforts to belittle the word did not stop people from using it. You have been listening to the VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories. I'm Warren Shear.
This is Shirley Griffith.
And this is Rich Kleinfeld with the special English program, People in America. Today, we tell about the well-known American poet, Walt Whitman.
Walt Whitman was born in 1819. During his long lifetime, he watched his country grow from an undeveloped new nation to the great industrial power it became. Whitman did not celebrate this growth, although other writers did. Instead, he wrote about the people and the spirit that produced American democracy. Whitman celebrated the common American, the person whose hands cut the trees and built the factories of industrial America.
I celebrate myself and sing myself, he wrote. And what I assume, you shall assume. For every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you. I loaf and invite my soul. I lean and loaf at my ease, observing a spear of summer grass.
Whitman celebrated all men and women, the working people, but also criminals, the weak and the hated. To Whitman, democracy was more than a political system or idea. It was a law of nature. It was the natural form of government sought by healthy, happy, free human beings. Democracy, Whitman believed, honors the rights of every person and the equality of all people.
I am the poet of the body, and I am the poet of the soul. I am the poet of the woman, the same as the man.
As a boy, Whitman could visit the port in Brooklyn, New York. Across the Hudson River was New York City. He could watch the ships and the men who sailed the oceans of the world. The life of the growing port city never failed to interest him. All this became the subject of the poems he wrote later. Yet no one understands how Whitman developed into a poet. He left school at 11 and worked in the office of a group of lawyers. Then he worked for a doctor. By the age of 12, Whitman was working in the printing office of a newspaper and doing some writing. When Whitman was 15, his family moved farther from New York. Whitman stayed. He often took the boat from Brooklyn, where he lived, to New York City. By the age of 16, he was working as a printer in New York. 1 year later, he rejoined his family and became a teacher. He made his father angry by refusing to do farm work. And the fathers and mothers of the children he taught thought him unwilling to work hard enough. By 1840, when he was 21, he had started a series of newspaper reports called Sundown Papers from the Desk of a Schoolmaster. He went back to New York City and began to work for a series of newspapers. Dismissed from one newspaper, he would find work with another. In one job, he was required to read the best-known writers of the time and to write about their books. He even wrote a bad novel himself about the evils of drinking. He was 36 and had never known much success. Then he paid to have his first book of poetry published. It was called Leaves of Grass. It was a thin book that contained 12 poems written in free verse. Free verse means that the lines do not follow any set form. Some lines are short, some long. Also, the words at the end of each line do not have a similar sound. They do not rhyme. The first poem in Leaves of Grass was a long one. When the book was first published, that poem had no name. Whitman later called it Song of Myself. Throughout the poem, Whitman writes about how grass covers the world and feeds us. He writes about grass as a sign of everlasting life. Grass links all living things in body and spirit, he says. We make our bread from grass, and we become grass when we die.
A child said, "What is the grass, fetching it to me with full hands?" How could I answer the child? I do not know what it is any more than he. I guess it must be the flag of my disposition, out of hopeful green stuff woven. Or I guess it is the handkerchief of the Lord, a scented gift and remembrancer designedly dropped, bearing the owner's name some way in the corners, that we may see and remark and say, "Whose?" And now it seems to me the beautiful uncut hair of graves. Tenderly will I use you, curling grass. It may be you transpire from the breasts of young men. It may be you are from old people, or from offspring taken soon out of their mother's laps. What do you think has become of the young and old men? And what do you think has become of the women and children? They are alive and well somewhere. The smallest sprout shows there is really no death. And if ever there was, it led forward life, and does not wait at the end to arrest it. All goes onward and outward, nothing collapses. And to die is different from what anyone supposed, and luckier.
Whitman sent out copies of his book to other writers. He hoped for their praise and support. Ralph Waldo Emerson, one of the best-known American thinkers and writers, immediately recognized the importance of the book. He wrote to Whitman, "I find it the most extraordinary piece of wit and wisdom that America has yet contributed. I have great joy in it." Most other poets and writers, however, remained silent about Leaves of Grass. Some were shocked by Whitman's praise of the human body and sexual love. One newspaper critic wrote that the book was a mass of stupid filth. Some people disliked Whitman's thoughts about society. He rejected the search for money and power. He denounced those who believed they were better than others in the eyes of God. He speaks these ideas in Song of Myself.
"I think I could turn and live with animals. They are so placid and self-contained. I stand and look at them long and long. They do not sweat and whine about their condition. They do not lie awake in the dark and weep for their sins. They do not make me sick discussing their duty to God. Not one is dissatisfied, Not one is demented with the mania of owning things. Not one kneels to another, nor to his kind that lived thousands of years ago. Not one is respectable or unhappy over the whole earth.
Whitman's ideas of religion and God were unusual. So were his ideas about beauty and the worth of the human body. Some of these ideas were from 19th century spiritual thinkers, but no one had ever declared them so clearly. Some critics consider this part of Song of Myself one of Whitman's most beautiful pieces of writing.
I have said that the soul is not more than the body, and I have said that the body is not more than the soul, and nothing, not God, is greater to one than one's self is. And I say to any man or woman, let your soul stand cool and composed before a million universes. And I say to mankind, be not curious about God. For I who am curious about each am not curious about God. No array of terms can say how much I am at peace about God and about death. I hear and behold God in every object, yet understand God not in the least. Nor do I understand who there can be more wonderful than myself. Why should I wish to see God better than this day? I see something of God each hour of the 24, and each moment then. In the face of men and women I see God, and my own face in the glass. I find letters from God dropped in the street, and every one is signed by God's name. And I leave them where they are, for I know that wheresoever I go, others will punctually come forever and ever.
Leaves of Grass was a living, growing work. Whitman republished it every few years for the rest of his life. Each time he added new poems, and he changed many lines of the old ones. The last version of the book contained more than 400 poems. By then, Whitman's fame had spread around the world. Next week, we will tell more about Walt Whitman's life and poetry. This special English program, People in America, was written by Richard Thorman and produced by LaJuan Davis. Rich Kleinfeld read the poems. I'm Shirley Griffith.